Again, and then they approached me after about you and asking what we wanted and what we felt. So I told them, go bigger, go home. These little tiny, non-effective stuff doesn't, it's not a fix. It just isn't. So.
Good.
Okay, welcome to the work meeting for our Morgan County Board of Education. And Member Treese, I know, is coming, but she just has a scoop to get from work to this 4 o'clock meeting, so we'll just welcome her as soon as she gets here. We're going to change the agenda items a little bit and just move our Representative Auxerre up to first, and then we'll talk about our PA evaluation as number two. Okay, so first of all, welcome so much. We are just delighted that you would come and listen to our plea and hear some concerns that we have. And I just mentioned to Superintendent Jensen that I thought about, but not quite in time, that we should have had our transportation department director over here with some of the videos that you could see that we have seen. But we're actually going to try to get those so that we can send them to you. And Superintendent Jensen, do you want to take over and start this discussion?
Certainly. Yeah, and actually, unfortunately, our transportation director wouldn't have been able to make it tonight. He's got another engagement, and he does have a compilation folded into a digital file that we'll be able to forward on, so we'll be able to share those.
Perfect.
I don't know if I want to call them highlights.
High lows, maybe.
Yeah, whatever. We've been discussing since just prior to the last legislative session, and I know I reached out to a couple of our representatives to just kind of float the possibility. We've been experiencing, at least in the time that I've been in the superintendency here in the district, just a high volume of drivers who disregard the stop arms on the buses, and it's every year it's increasingly our drivers grow increasingly frustrated, and they do what they can on the roads, you know, particularly over on Highway 66. So a little bit of preliminary research and looked around at what other states have done. We've looked a little bit at Illinois and Florida. And we're just interested in the possibility of exploring legislation that would allow local law enforcement to, when we capture these violators, when they pass, we have really good video footage. We're able to capture license plate numbers. We're able to identify who these vehicles are registered to, but we have a difficult time identifying the drivers. And right now, we're unable to really, we don't have a lot of, or law enforcement isn't able to cite the specific driver. Now, our SROs and our local sheriff's department has been really cooperative, and they're willing to go out and contact the citizens whose vehicles these are registered to. But we're just curious about the opportunity, or the possibility of exploring legislation that would allow law enforcement to actually cite the person who the car is registered to based on the license plate, rather than having to identify, through facial recognition who the actual driver was. How many states do that, but Florida in particular, we haven't done a deep dive into that, but that seems to be one of the success places where that's been successful, that type of legislation is successful. So I floated in our transportation safety meeting, which we hold annually in November. I think that's when I reached out, initially to a couple of representatives. I floated that to our local board and our transportation committee, and we've also discussed it with, you know, local law enforcement, and again, just thought we'd initiate that to see if we can explore. That's something that we our local representatives would be wanting to explore with us.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of pushback on both sides, but I think, you know, it's an issue for sure and worth looking into to see if there's something we can do.
Yeah, we have felt like it's actually probably just a really good place to get a conversation started, because we take turns, you know, visiting the different schools in the transportation department, and, you know, I've been a firsthand witness to, especially in Mountain Green on Old Highway Road, it's almost a daily occurrence of one vehicle, if not more. And yeah, it's scary. There are several things that we're working on to try to improve safety for our students getting to and from school. And that's one that, with the buses, we'd like to at least get that conversation going. And then we're also working with our city and our county to put some flashing lights at the crosswalks over on State Street to see if we can't make that a safer place for those kids that are crossing that busy highway. And yeah, it's just scary. I sat here in our parking lot going to leave a couple of weeks ago, and a student started into the crosswalk and a car came, just missed him by inches. And so we really are doing everything we can to try to make sure that we keep them safe at school, but also to and from. So, and if you have any questions once you're maybe discussing this, or, and we have talked with our law enforcement and our safety committee, but, you know, maybe there's something that we're not aware of as far as the law officers being able to have more authority to cite those people. It's been a real, every bus driver we have, and they become so possessive of their kids, and it's actually just a real delight to ride with them, because they've trained the kids now that have to cross that street to look at the driver and wait for a signal, because the driver can see a car coming from the other way that the students might not be able to see. But kids are kids, and sometimes they forget, so we're trying to just make that safer. Any other comments from the board, or any questions you might have?
I was just thinking, like, a lot of times you see sometimes legislation that, or proposed legislation that maybe seems specific to one area, like it's a problem in one region of the state or something. My guess is this is probably, it's a big problem in our rural community. My guess would probably be it's a big problem statewide if we talk with other areas. I would think that it's, if people are just always rushed, right? Like in our society, like you see how people drive anywhere. Like it's, the safety of our kids is something I think that other people would put as a priority to. Yeah. Other state leaders and school boards and stuff, I would think.
I mean, kind of just echoing, especially on Old Highway Road, especially right after Kangaroo, that stop, that every single morning, I'm almost always with that bus. It scares me, because I have seen so many near misses, and it scares me to pieces. So just echoing, especially coming from like a middle schooler, or not even an adult, probably a middle schooler, but it just scares me at how close those cars are coming to hitting those students. So I agree, there needs to be some change.
Thank you, Jackson.
I have a question. Representative Vox here. When you mentioned pushback from both sides, what do you see as opposition? Just funding?
No, but the fact of charging someone and finding someone who might own something. It's like the same thing with a gun. Are you going to charge someone who owned the gun but someone else shot, and how are you going to prove it? It's that same thing. It's the privacy aspect, and, you know, are we taking the step of making someone responsible for something that they didn't do? So.
Okay. Worth discussing, for sure.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong ever having a discussion and seeing what there is. And like you said, you know, maybe there's other ideas out there as well. So I think it's definitely worth looking into.
Okay.
And I'm happy to do that.
Anything else? Well, we sincerely thank you for your time, and thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate your listening here.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
You know, I had a couple updates on education. I didn't know if you guys would
Great.
Want to know, but we are now the fifth highest starting salary in the country for teachers. We've been the second highest in the West for a while, and so I think over the last 4 years, we've increased education funding by $2.3 billion, which is almost 35%. And, you know, this past year we've increased WPU by 4.2%, which was a little bit more than was asked. We've also made a lot of movement and trying to help, like, in the classroom itself. And so I know with the third grade literacy stuff that has passed, I'm sure you guys all know about that. And so that will be really interesting, how we can put a lot more help for those third graders as they're, and, you know, even kindergarten, first, second grade, before they get through third grade. Because, you know, as we all know, if you can't read, you can't do math later, you can't do science later, it holds you back on so many things. And so that early literacy is something that we've really been trying to double down on. And we've made a lot of investments to fund 32 hours of additional educator professional time and provide stipends and for student teachers, growing and expanding the Grow Your Own pipeline. I don't know if you guys have made use of that, or
we actively participate in the Grow Your Own pipeline. Yes,
that's
been very beneficial.
That's awesome. And let's see. I know you guys know about the cell phone ban, and I think just we're focusing on trying to have as little disruptions to the classroom as possible. With all the cuts that we had to take last year, we wanted to make sure, you know, that the kids were the least disrupted. And then the technology in schools, from what my kids experienced, I don't think that that was as big of a change here as maybe in some other school districts who were relying on technology a lot more on their kids and the one-to-one computers and stuff. So I didn't feel like that was that big. I felt like you guys were already kind of ahead of that curve as far as not relying on so much technology, but that's another thing.
Can I just make a comment there?
Yes,
because
please.
I was just recently in a third grade classroom that my granddaughter's in, and the use of technology for what was going on was just nothing short of wonderful. And so I just want to say, please let there be balance, you know, in all the, we don't want to cut and dried, let's not have any computers in these early grade levels, because there were just, and it was just a little supplementary thing after that gave the kids some very valuable practice in exactly what they were doing. So that's my comment, is let's make sure that we have balance, and that it's just not a flat, let's not have computers for these younger grades.
Yeah, I think you'll see that that's what the legislation was like as far as how much, you know, it's kind of the recommended amount in there or not, but definitely supplemental, I think, is, you know, more personalized maybe.
You know, I also think one other area, and I love the focus on early literacy, and our folks have taken that really seriously, but we're also a little bit ahead of the game there, because I looked at the percentages of our third graders that, you know, meet that currently, and they're doing well, but we can always do better.
That's great.
But thank you.
Yeah, of course.
And anything else?
I guess, do you guys have your scores back from all the testing yet, or what does that come in? What, do you guys know how Morgan stands at the moment?
We get them back in real time. Early returns are really favorable. We always start out, but then the students who don't show up are usually the students. So it takes us a month or two to track everyone down and get all the numbers in. So we usually start out like, whoa, this is crazy. But then our students that we have trouble attending and then sometimes perform lower. So we're out of the gate doing really well. I'm still trying to round up everybody and get all the stragglers data in. So,
okay.
But yeah, we get that information in real time.
Okay. We'll be interested to see what it's like once it's all collected together.
It's all on the calendar.
All right. Well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for having us in the box here. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Okay. Well, we switched one and two, so we'll now go to our agenda item, which is the business administrator evaluation summary. And I will accept a motion to dismiss us into a closed session for a few minutes, since that is regarding personnel.
I'll make a motion to go into a closed session.
I will second that motion.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded that we move into a closed session for the purpose of discussing personnel. And that has to be a roll call vote with a 2/3 majority, so we'll have Jana take that vote.
Annie?
Yes.
Kelly?
Yes.
Andrea?
Yes.
Andy?
Yes.
Angie?
Yes.
Okay. The vote was unanimous. That motion passed. And so we will excuse ourselves to the conference room for just a few minutes, and then we'll be back then to our regular work meeting.
Do you bring anything, like laptops or
anything? Nope.
No, I think we're good because
Richard has
taking care of us with those copies of those summaries.
Do you want me to come in?
Oh, only decent. Jason was bored.
No, I actually finished typing up everything that I want to mention tonight. A lot. Because there's been a lot that's been going on.
I imagine.
Thank you.
And trust me, that's really good.
Yeah.
8 days.
She has 3.
We haven't had one.
That's right.
Seniors don't get it. There's so much politics.
I have a senior this year.
I was in the state, right? It wouldn't be a problem.
It's not me.
No, that's how we can get the other.
Well, no, we start, let's see.
Okay, we can go ahead and have the motion to move us back into our regular meeting from executive session. And I was hoping to time it right when he walked in the door that we turn the time over to him. But yeah, I'll accept that motion.
I'll make a motion to move from closed session back into the regular work session.
I'll second.
It has been moved and seconded to move from our executive session back into our regular board meeting. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Anyone opposed? Say no. The motion passes and we are now back in our regular session. And we're on agenda item 3 on our work meeting agenda. And I am going to turn the time over to RBA Scott McMillan to go through our final budget and tentative budget, some things. This is also on our discussion for our regular meeting. So if we need more discussion, we'll have plenty of time to do that.
Okay, thank you. Before we get started, just to give some context and background why we're doing this a little bit differently this year. Historically, in May, the Finance Committee would meet and go through kind of high-level budget assumptions and set a framework for the budget, which would then be worked on and presented to the board in June for the budget approval. at the June meeting, then depending on that budget, then we either approve it or schedule a retreat taxation hearing for August if there's an increase in the budget. And so last year we did that where in June we met and saw what the new growth numbers were and decided to forego the truth in taxation for those funding items. And this year, due to legislation that passed in this session, the truth in taxation process has been expanded and changed in some interesting ways, which the purpose of is to give more transparency to the budget process. And so we're starting that discussion now in May. Under state statute, at the first time that a budget discussion is presented to the board, we have to present a impact, use the right word, a property tax impact schedule, which I'll be presenting to you in the board meeting so that we can capture a video footage of me presenting it to you so you can share that video footage with the compliance department on truth in taxation. So what's interesting about that is the county assessor has not assessed properties yet. So we don't know the valuation of those properties. The certified rate process hasn't been done. We don't know what tax collections will look like. And so all of those elements that are usually part of the board discussion are not applicable at this point. And so today I'll be, you know, walking through this, but we elected to not do the finance committee because that's a little gray of whether I can present budget information to the finance committee and not trigger this first discussion with the board about the budget. So the spirit of the law is that they want us to start the budget process earlier in the year so that we don't get to August and all of a sudden taxpayers come to the August hearing and it's a done deal because school starts in 2 weeks. And so this allows us a more transparent process. So we're going through this with the whole board in the public meeting that we'd normally do in the finance committee, and I think it's going to be great and exciting. So we'll just walk through quickly what's in your packets, and then I emailed out a supplementary item today. And for those of you in the audience, that if you didn't get a chance to grab some slides on the back, there are some there if you want to follow along on some pieces of those. I'm going to be going through a more detailed packet that's not fully back there, but when we get to the meat of it, the general fund is the only fund that's subject to these rules. So starting on page 7.
These two pages are the same as what you emailed us today, so if we're looking at these.
Yeah, okay. And I have a copy of that for the public as well.
Just wanted to make sure. Didn't need that.
But we're first going to start on page 7 in the packet with the formal budget package. It has the logo and says the final budget for 25-26 and the tentative budget for 27. This is a draft version of what you will approve in the June meeting. And so the first page of it, we'll just go through it page by page. Page 8 is the general fund. This is where all of our school operations activity happens. We have three columns of data we're displaying there. The far left column is the most recent audited financial statements. That has our actual. The next column is our final budget, which is the school year that will end here in about a month. And so that budget will need board action in June to approve those final amounts for the budget. It's a little different than how you budget at home or in private enterprise in that we set the budget, the final budget at the end of the year, but that's just a nuance. And then in the far right column, the initial budget for 26-27. Again, in draft form, and if you look about two-thirds of the way down in the final budget column, there's an item that says budget contingency, which will require some explanation. On the general fund, it's $1,500,000, and it's highlighted in bold. It's not legal for us to spend more money than what the board has approved. And when we get to this time of year, as we're doing our big capital projects over the summer, like this year, for example, the gym, we still got $1 million or $1.5 million of spending that's going to flow through that. There's some uncertainty how much of that's going to be paid prior to June 30th and how much after July 1st in which fiscal year. But if we pay an invoice between now and June 30th that's in excess of the budgeted amount, then that's an audit finding and causes us all kinds of problems. So it's a little bit of a tricky thing, because if we go pad the budget to move the budget up to be high enough that we know we're not going to go over it, then you don't get a realistic budget. But if we put the budget, you know, as the target for spending, then there's too high of a likelihood that we'll trip that up based on the timing. So what we've done the last 4 or 5 years is we just put this contingency amount in the budget there, with the understanding that those are funds that we could spend up to that amount without having an audit finding, but we're not changing the line item budgets. And you'll see that on each page. So just a budgeting practice. Fund 31, going to the next. If you have any questions specifically on these pages, we'll go through them in a little more detail in the June meeting. But I'll just kind of hit the high level now so it can be presented. The debt fund, this is where the funds flow in and out for paying our debt payment. The next one is Fund 32, which is our capital funds. This is strictly property tax funds that are used for capital maintenance and upgrades on the buildings. 51 is food service, and 21 is student activities. Tonight, the focus of what we're going to be talking about is general fund, that first page there, as that has the most moving pieces and is really going to drive where we set our property tax rate for this upcoming year. That's where all our, the majority of our salaries go. One other thing that we have happening in 24-25 and 25-26 is we have two significant construction projects. Well, one significant construction project and one safety. So we have about $4 million grant that we received for the middle school gym, and then the expending of that grant, which flows through that. And then we have about $2.8 million in safety upgrades that we did over the last couple of years with the grant. And so those two items are significant, and so they inflate our revenues and our expenses. And so if you dig into the details on this, you might have some questions of like, why is that going up or down so much? So
where's that safety one? You said it's on the general fund.
It's just built into multiple lines in the general fund. The safety grant. So it would be included in state of Utah revenue, that $23.5 million.
Okay.
So you see the $23.5 million goes down to $21.8 million for this upcoming year.
Okay.
The majority of that decrease is the safety grant that was one time. This kind of for your, you know, process, these two colorful sheets, which I know you're hoping that we would get to add in. Is an adjusted version of the financial statements where I've taken out that construction and safety activity. So these are not the audited financial statements. These are what a run rate would look like. And so I'd just like to highlight on the orange colored page, if you go to the bottom of the fiscal year 25 actual, if we take out all the construction activity and all the safety grant, those one-time things, we ended up a change in fund balance of $1,312,000. So our fund balance, you know, inflated a bunch as we got those grants in, and then it's come back down. But on an apples-to-apples basis, we spent $1.3 million more than what we collected in that year. And so our fund balance was starting, you know, to get up on the high end. The state kind of changed the target from 6 months to 3 months as there's a feeling that maybe districts are sitting on too much money. So we're now going to be about right between 2.8 and 3 months. So we've come right down into alignment with where we're supposed to be, but we need to not continue to dip into savings at the rate that we did in the most recent year that we completed. If you go over to the 27 column on that, you'll see it's about $1.7 million is what we anticipate that shortfall with the and that's really driven by two things. One, on the bottom 7 or 8 lines on the blue sheet are programs that the state eliminated. So you can see all those that have revenue in 25 but not in 26 or 27. And then up at the top, it really what the assumptions are on interest earnings, fee in lieu, redemption, and some of those unpredictable items. So, and our interest rates appear to be holding. You know, we don't budget for our interest rates to stay as high as they are. We're conservative in what we budget, so we'll do a little better than what that shows. The property tax impact statement, that's the next one. There's copies on the back here. This is a document that's prescribed in legislation of exactly what the wording has to be. And I will read this in the discussion in our board meeting so we can go through there. For your information, this is showing $1,745,000 of new revenue, and that's what we'll shift to next, is kind of what the recommendations are for new spending. I've had to make assumptions to come up with that that's an 11% increase and that it will decrease an average homeowner's property tax by 0.5%. But we don't know the valuations yet, so those are estimates at this point. That next page, which has the truth in taxation calculations, we went through this in our training last year. I'm sure it's a vivid memory that you have of our finance training, but this sheet is what we'll use to kind of estimate what the certified tax rate will be in advance of when we formally have it. The assumptions I put into this is that the overall valuation in the county increases by 12%, and that the average home value in the county stays flat. We don't know those numbers in talking with the assessor, and not on the record. She anticipates that the existing homes won't have the level of increases that we've experienced in the last few years, that we're going to see a pretty flat, same home increase, but we'll have substantial increase based on new growth and new properties coming online. So that's what this represents.
Do I need the mic on for work session? Or?
Yes.
Okay, so I know a lot of these are tentative, not final, but some of these recommendations, early kind of recommendations, I remember talking about Wasatch Peaks Resort and the number of completed homes and new growth, and I know the homes are taxed at 100% rather than 50, like a, you know,
primary
residence. But I also know there's some litigation or something going on with like the Board of Equalization. Is this kind of taking into account the fact of like maybe some shortfalls of residents trying to see if their valuations are too high?
No, we haven't done anything to take into account. It doesn't appear from my conversations with the assessor that that's a material impact either way, whatever happens on that.
Do we have a time frame of, could that go on for years and years, or do we know?
I can't speak to the legal process on it, but it's not something that's probably, we'll get our new growth through the certified tax rate. We don't make any attempt to be predictive on that.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I can't speak to the legal process on it. Okay. We'll come back to this list in the box there of the requests and let the superintendent speak to those. But before we do that, I just wanted to touch on this slide. This is the same slide we've used for, I think, 5 years now, so it's pretty familiar. The blue line there, it shows this is the school district tax rate. This excludes what the state does and county and city and other municipalities. This is just the school rates that this body sets. So we have an increase in that pretty substantially as we brought on the bond for the high school and middle school back in the 18-19-20 period. That flattened out, and then from 21 on, you can see it's been a pretty significant decline. The orange line represents the certified rate. So in 2023, the certified rate would have floated the rate down to 0.5351, but the board elected to set it at 0.5788, so that difference captured those additional monies, which was the year that we did the $5,000 increase for all of our teachers to kind of fill some of that big gap and not be the very lowest district.
Yeah.
And so then we floated it down for 2 years in a row. Now this year that we have right here, the certified rate with the assumptions that I've put in that are just assumptions. But you can see it's kind of in a trend line. The rate floating down to 0.4217, and if we were to raise $1.7 million on that, we would need to keep the rate at 0.04701, so just slightly down from where it is now. And then the other piece of this equation is when we get to June, we'll have a new growth number. So if we have a substantial number of homes on Wasatch Peaks that were finished last year and those valuations are assessed in January, and that generates new growth, and that would reduce that line down.
Even more.
And so, to put it in context, the ask that we have for new budgetary dollars is $1,745,000. The new growth last year was $991,000. So
we can easily make up that difference based on what's
if
coming
new growth this year was the same as last year, then you'd be able to float that rate about halfway, you know, half of that gap. If the new growth is more than or less than, then that changes. And so we're kind of, at this point, we're just saying, what is the new money we're wanting to spend? And then in June, we'll talk about where we get that money, because by June, we'll know what has Wasatch Peaks generated and what's that look like. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, this is just a shameless plug here for history, but the second sheet on here is a sampling. I non-randomly went throughout the community and just selected a home from each of the major communities. And if I know you, your house is probably fixed. anyway, this is all just off the county records, and this is showing total property tax. This isn't just the school tax. This includes the fire, you know, district that had some big increases. I split the Morgan City ones down because they had some significant increases. So just dollars for dollars, the actual dollars that you're either writing a check for or having pulled out of your escrow. And you can see throughout from 23 to 25, we had pretty substantial decreases. The average home would have been right around the $450 to $475 decrease over the last 2 years. So that's the reason that your phones have been ringing off the hook and all the thank you cards are coming to you for that. In the city, I just adjusted because they had a substantial increase from 23 to 24. And then, so the dollar change there is from 24 to 25, you can see that decrease. So last year we had a pretty big ask. We had almost $1 million of new spending. The big piece was the SRO, you know, adding funding the SROs last year. And we were able to do that and float the rate all the way down, meaning essentially the money from Wasatch Peaks and other new growth paid for all of that spending, and we were still able to decrease individual property owners pretty much across the board, unless you, I haven't found any from 24 to 25 didn't have a decrease in the property taxes, so.
Scott, do you mind if we break here and then we can do the rest of this discussion during our regular board meeting? I want to give all board members a 5-minute break, and then we'll reconvene for our regular session.
The breakout your CPA accounts.
I know you like to talk to
my friend at the temple.